Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ.
It's all right, baby, it's all right. It's all right, baby, it's all right. Anything you say is gonna be okay. It's all right. I'll take you at your promise. I will not ask you why. I only wish to love you until the day I die.
You're listening to Stratford's Laura McMillan singing and playing guitar to Gordon Lightfoot's Baby It's Alright. I'm Steve Todd, and today on Musicians FAQ, you're in for a musical treat. We have a full hour talking to Laura, where she talks about her first two albums, as well as several solo and collaborative projects she has on the go. Her current jazz project, Blue Tulip, has a single and video coming out in November, and she also puts on a one-woman storied concert called Grade 8, a humorous and heartfelt look back at being 13, combined with music from that time period. She is also working on a tribute to Leonard Cohen called Laura Loves Leonard, which strips the music down to a point that the audience can focus and reflect on Cohen's poetry. I saw Laura and her band Blue Tulip at Gallery Stratford, where despite the near freezing temperatures for an outdoor concert in late September, Laura was putting on an energetic show and keeping the bundled up crowd entertained. Despite COVID-19 and all of life's challenges, Laura is pushing forward with her many music projects. Let's check in with Laura in Stratford. All right, thanks a lot for listening to Musicians FAQ. It's Steve Todd, and today we're in Stratford with Laura McMillan. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, yeah. Steve.
I met you just maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago at the Gallery Stratford, and you were doing an outdoor concert in sub-zero temperatures.
It was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah. The band Blue Tulip.
Yeah, and actually at the half, I thought it was so cold that I said to the guys, you know, I understand if, yep. And I know that Angela Abraham at the gallery understands if it's not playable right now because it's hard enough to sing.
Oh, yeah.
But playing a stringed instrument for in the cold when it's dropping is not easy. And they were such troopers, right? Oh, yeah. They're such pros that they just kept going.
And it's great you put that on because there's hardly anything happening with COVID-19. So
I know. It's unfortunate, obviously, and I know that people are hungry for those opportunities to gather and to experience just about anything together. I haven't performed since before my dad passed, which was in February of this year, just before the lockdown.
Over this hour, we're going to talk about that band, the Blue Tulip, and we're also going to talk about your previous two albums. And then you also have a couple of projects on the go called Laura Loves
Leonard.
Leonard, that's right. I was going to say Lennon. And and you have another one-person, I can't think of the name of it. It's
Grade 8.
Yeah, Grade 8 is the name of the, but it's got a special...
I call them storied concerts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which is just to say that it's like a cabaret.
Yeah.
I find cabaret is... I don't know, a little bit irreverent. So it's often focusing a lot on the comedic.
Yeah.
So I don't call it a cabaret, even though it has roots in that. Yeah. So really, it's me telling stories and then singing usually parts of songs, usually not whole songs, but parts of songs that connect with those stories.
Okay. So there's a lot to cover over this hour. So tell you what, why don't we start with where you're from? And how you got involved with music, and I know you have a kind of a long history with both your parents playing music.
Well, I mean, I just thought my parents were superstars when I was growing up, because when we had a party at the house, my mother would sit at the piano and play, like, she had four ukulele chords, but she would bang them out on the piano, and everybody would gather and sing, like, Yellow Bird, and those were the days, and I was mesmerized, right? And my dad was a bagpiper. Played the guitar and sang in the choir. He also played the piano, but he didn't sit at the piano very often. And back in those days, because there's such a kind of British, Scottish tradition in in Canada, there were pipe bands that were affiliated with high schools and, you know, the Boy Scouts and all those kinds of things. So Dad was in a pipe band and continued to pipe. Now, he was not comfortable with the military side of it, so he strayed away from playing in bands and just became a kind of Pied Piper in neighborhood. And so he would pull them out for every special occasion, and the kids would follow him around, and it was really evocative.
I bet.
It was something else, because you can't really ignore it. And then he had a guitar that he ended up with quite by accident, because I think his younger brother had purchased it when they were young. It was a K, Canadian make, and he his younger brother ended up not wanting it anymore, so he purchased it from his brother, and he used to write songs. And so when we were up at the cottage, we would sing before we went to bed every night songs that he wrote, and classics like You Are My Sunshine Jamaica Farewell. So there was a lot of that kind of in my life. And then I started taking piano at 5. I was really fortunate to have an incredible music teacher, Jane Orr, at Victoria Public School in Windsor. And she introduced me to Joni Mitchell and the Beatles and all kinds of musicals. And she ran a program that included operettas. So I had an opportunity to be on stage doing that kind of thing, performing.
This is your high school years then?
That is actually elementary school.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So, and then I had a band teacher as well, Grace Lewis, who ran something called the West Side Band. So the West End was a little more depressed than some of the other areas of Windsor. And she dedicated herself to bringing together a band.
That's great.
And it was amazing. We actually were so good that we went to Toronto when I was in grade 9, and we won the Qantas Festival there.
That's amazing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're doing piano, you said? Or?
At that time, I was doing flute in that band.
Oh, good for you.
Okay. Yeah. So then I started writing a lot of music. I ended up at a high school with not much of a music program in Windsor, but I used to play in the assemblies. I used to play songs that I wrote, and also covers. And I was really encouraged by my friends and peers. There was quite a bit of appreciation, which was great. And then I took a year off after high school, and I went out to Banff to kind of find myself. I ended up working at the Banff Center, and that's when I really reconnected with my piano on a more exploratory basis. And that's when I decided to go to university for music, and I studied piano at university. And I had all kinds of opportunities through there, singing choirs and ensembles and stuff. So that was really exciting for me.
That's great. Where'd you go to university then?
I actually went out east because I was always curious about it. So I ended up in New Brunswick at Mount Allison University.
Great.
I'll never forget my first kitchen party.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'd never experienced anything like it. They really know how to show you a good time in the Maritimes. Everybody plays something.
Yeah.
And if you don't play something, there's a pot or a pan that you can pick up, right?
And plus, you would be fluent in piano and the flute, too. So
yeah, and I was playing the guitar. I have to say, I was always too intimidated to pick up an instrument at the kitchen parties. You know, they've all been improvising. Here I am studying classical music at a university, and these people have all been improvising and understanding how those instruments intersect for so long.
Yeah, your Scottish roots would fit right in with that, though, too, because there's so much of that East Coast music that is based on Scottish, I think, right?
So the Maritimes is really fascinating because you've got Gaelic and you've got Acadian and you've got just Francophone, and then you've got Newfoundland, which is like a world unto itself. Oh, yeah. I mean, the finest, loveliest people you're ever going to meet, yeah, obviously come from, wow, from that province. And it's got a really interesting history because, of course, there were a lot of emancipated blacks that came into Nova Scotia.
Yes.
Because of Pier 21 in Halifax being the kind of the mouth of immigration, you've just got so many people from so many places,
oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah. The cool thing for you, too, so you started in Windsor with your parents, and then Banff, your music grew there, and then now you're in New Brunswick, and you're again, you're picking up more different styles of music the whole time, right?
Yeah, and in Banff, when I was working at the center, at the Banff Center, I coordinated the music program, and
wow,
they asked me to do the jazz program, which was like a month-long program, I think, in the winter, and it was then that I really got my dose of jazz.
That's
when
great.
I really...
Okay.
Kind of fell in love with that kind of music.
Yep.
So I always loved pop and rock and roll and a lot of what I would call folk music,
yep,
but not just Canadian and American,
okay,
folk, but also the Serbian folk that my mother would play,
okay,
in her records, right? Because she sang, before she got married, she sang in a band,
wow, okay,
in a Serbian band, yeah.
We're going to hear a little bit of jazz that you do, and... both your two albums are totally different. The one has got more of a rocky edge. The other one's a softer, lighter album. And so it's cool that you can't just put yourself in one bucket. You've done totally different things.
Well, it's really interesting to me because I heard an interview with Billie Eilish,
who's
you know, this kind of huge supernova star right now,
yeah,
and she talks about how she doesn't want to write in one idiom, that she wants people to listen to her music and like Billie Eilish, but not necessarily categorize themselves as being a pop person or a hip hop person or a emo person,
yeah,
or, you know, whatever labels you want to give.
Yeah.
And I, when I'm writing music, I feel that way, and I always have. I've felt that the songs... They have a personality, and
yeah,
I want to serve that personality. So you're right. In the first record, there were a lot of rocker songs, and I had a different kind of edge,
yeah,
as a person then. That was done in 2008, and actually, okay, it took a couple of years to put it together, so I started it in 2006.
Okay.
And yeah, it had... Like, I was struggling in different ways, and that shows in the songs, and I wanted...
Yeah.
Really ripping electric guitars,
okay, yeah,
right?
Well,
yeah,
okay.
And then in the next album, I'd gotten married, I had settled in a different way, I was looking at relationships in a different way and life in general.
Yeah, when you're older and you're just, yeah, you're not a teenager anymore, and so you're just, life is different, right? You're thinking about different things. And,
absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so your first album is called Miss Mercury,
mm-hmm,
and you mentioned it had took roughly 2 years. I think you said you went through three different engineers to get this album together, right?
Yeah, I ended up with Stu Crooks, who is he's worked with a lot of people, perhaps most famously Hoxley Workman. He does a lot of engineering for him.
Yep.
And he's got amazing ears. So I'm really glad I ended up with him. And actually, he's engineering my Lara Loves Leonard, which is coming up.
Okay.
And but I started with Bryden Baird, who is an incredible horn player. And the only reason I kind of had to move on from him was that he went out on tour with Feist. And then I ended up working for some time with Don Kerr, who's the drummer for Ron Sexsmith.
Okay.
I'm not sorry that I had to leapfrog through.
Yeah.
I went through four drummers, too.
Oh, okay.
I think that when you are trying to find a sound,
yep,
and working independently, so you're not working under a label where they can throw a lot of money at somebody and then that person is yours for whatever,
yep,
period of time, is because they're paid already. So when you're working, yep, with all these independent artists, you've kind of got to be you've got to be flexible.
Yeah, for sure. I think you told me in the past that this album came about from doing a whole bunch of open mics and open stages where you were just trying out your ideas and seeing kind of what sticks and what,
oh, yeah,
what's good and what's bad. And
yeah, there were open stages, lots of great ones in the West End, Holy Joe's and the Free Times Cafe. And there was a really good one at Mitzi's Sister, which was in the Parkdale area. And then a bunch of different pop-ups. And I was connected to the acting and theater scene too. So a lot of times there would be fundraisers and things where people would say, hey, do you want to do a short set? There was a lot of great community built at that time. And then I hadn't really thought about recording. I mean, mostly because I'm not a tech person. And I think recordings were just starting to be kind of democratized, right? As far as thinking about releasing your own CD or your own material. MySpace had just come up.
Okay.
And at a few of the open mics in 2004 and 5, people would say, hey, I really love that song, Miss Mercury. You know, where can I find it? Can I, you know, do you have it recorded somewhere? And I'd be like, no.
Well.
So it grew out of other people's ideas.
Yeah.
Or
encouragement. They just, they're
exactly
saying, I love that song, and why don't you do something with that?
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
So that was exciting for me.
That's great.
I was able to do a couple of residencies at Grossman's Tavern.
Really?
And
okay.
And at the Cameron House, which is a great space. And it was through those two places that I really connected to other musicians and also to fans of music, because they're kind of institutions.
So we're going to hear two songs off that album. There's like the first one's called Rare Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the one with that really pretty piano that kind of starts on?
Yeah.
Of? Okay, I love that song.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's such a nice theme. Want to talk about that a bit?
I love it, yeah. It's so funny because that song started on the piano and then I didn't think it was working. And then I moved it to the guitar and it changed so that I didn't like the energy. So then I moved it back to the piano.
Okay. You're all trying to
I was struggling with the opening of that song.
Yeah.
I started thinking of some of the movie soundtracks that I really love, and because I see it as a little film in my head, that particular song, the opening is kind of designed as almost like the opening credits music, which is a little different than some of my other songs, I think.
Yep.
It stands out.
Oh yeah, it sounds great.
Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, I'm so happy that I stayed 13 hours bright with memories, and the sweetest love was made. See you standing in your house cold, in the early morning snow. All the city's quiet, God knows I'm tired, but I'm so inspired, 'cause now I know rare beauty, rare beauty, hanging in the air between us, tempting us to trust this rare beauty, rare. Wish this spell could stay unbroken, bring an orange as a token when we might find that beauty again. Your message safe for months now. I listen to it every day.
have been others I've deleted on the road to our decay. But that beautiful of the past helps me to make last that Tuesday evening so sublime when I had and we share rare beauty silent spaces now between us didn't dare to trust that that spell had stayed unbroken, all the words we left unspoken, bring an orange as a token when we might find their beauty. Will we find their beauty? Bring an orange as a token when we might share their beauty again.
Hi, I'm Craig Beck from Kitchener, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.ca.
All right, we're back. Thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ. I'm Steve Todd, and let's continue our interview.
So a second song you wanted to feature off your first album, Miss Mercury, is called Unrequited.
Unrequited is about, it's about having a crush on someone that you probably shouldn't have a crush on. But still, and that person maybe not even noticing you and still enjoying the fact that you're having that feeling. I was playing around with an idea for writing a song that I had picked up from an article, an interview with Elvis Costello, where he was saying that sometimes he takes chords from songs that he really likes and he'll mix them up and try them different ways. Yep. And see if he finds his own song out of that. And so I took Crazy by Willie Nelson, which okay. I love.
Oh, yeah.
And I took those chords. I'm crazy about Willie Nelson.
Yeah. I'm a big fan too.
I took those chords and I mixed them up and I ended up with Unrequited. And I mean, they don't sound anything alike, not to my ear. It's not even really the same style.
Yeah.
The color chords that Nelson uses are just... well, they're kind of sublime. They just elevate. I mean, I'm all about, I mean, I can get behind three or four chords in the truth. Yeah. But when there are some color chords thrown in, you know, your heart, your soul, your body can't help but respond.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And feel those nuances. And that's what I find in Unrequited is that it serves that song because of those aching, you know, color chords.
Your eyes light me up from inside. Shouldn't say it, but they do. Your eyes light me up from inside. I'm in this dive looking for you. Your words rolling round in my head. Shouldn't let them, but I do. Your words keeping me from my bed. Walk the floor with thinking on you. And what's a girl to do? delighted with you.
So Hugh's Room, I had my first CD release,
yep.
And I was obviously really nervous, and I felt like a total imposter, and I had all kinds of people that knew me in the audience,
yep.
And some people that didn't, and I was waiting kind of off the stage to be called up at the appropriate time, and the announcer came up on stage, the booker, and said, hello, folks. This is the moment you've been waiting for. You all know her, yeah. And you're looking forward to hearing her music. Here she is, Laura McDonald.
Yeah, she got both names wrong.
I know. I don't think that's ever happened to me, yeah. Before. So it was a real... I mean, it certainly was an icebreaker.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Everybody laughed.
Yeah.
And then I... reintroduce myself.
Yeah. But yeah, you probably walk out and you probably actually feel better than if you said it correctly and just walked out nervously. So
yeah, I think it's interesting. It's what we do with experiences,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
Maybe some people would be, maybe they'd have their tail in a knot, right?
I've learned how to laugh everything off. Anything that happens on stage, it doesn't matter if somebody drops something or forgets the verse or something. You just have to laugh it off and have a good time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So how did you create your second album? Because the first one, you said, took quite a while and some soul searching and some a lot of different people were collaborating on the first one. Was that the same thing that happened with the second one? Or?
No, I hired one producer engineer, and I was actually commuting from Stratford to Toronto to do the album.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah,
I don't think I would ever do that again.
Yeah.
And I used some of the same personnel on this album.
Okay.
Bryden played horns, and Roger Travassos plays the drums on this.
Okay.
And he's been the anchor, I think, to
That's
all
great.
My projects.
Okay.
And has become a really good friend. So it was definitely easier making the second record.
Yeah.
It's funny to imagine yourself at the beginning of the record and think, okay, where am I going to end up? What is it supposed to look like at the end? For the most part, it was a straight line, which was great. So I started it and finished it in 6 months.
Oh, that's great. Okay, good. So I guess the first album came out in 2008 and the second one came out in 2013. So you had, 5 years to kind of figure out the songs and how you wanted the album to feel, and even who you wanted to be on it. I guess the musicians and the studio and everything, right?
Yeah. I think the exciting thing for me about doing the second album was that I had spent a lot of time writing in between 2008 and 2013. I hadn't ended up with a lot of songs, but I'd really spent a lot of time thinking about the songs that I did have.
Yeah.
That was a different experience. And I also, once you've done a recording... you kind of have a sense of what is possible. Whereas the first recording, I remember we'd record the drums and I'd be like, wow, I can't believe that, right? Yeah. Because I didn't have a reference.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was interesting to write songs and understand what I might be writing mm-hmm. for.
Yeah, and you just understand the whole process in the studio and how...
Instrumentation, yeah, and sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
good for you. I think there's two songs and maybe three that you want to talk about. So you mentioned one called All Your Black Colors, and I think that's got a little bit of a deeper meaning, right?
Oh, it definitely.
Yeah.
You know, for a little while I was working in television in Toronto when I first arrived in the late 90s, and I worked for... TVO, and I did a program there, and unfortunately I worked with somebody who was really an angry sort and very controlling. What I found was that this song just kind of came out of that experience.
I think you called it your Me Too song or something,
right? That's right. Yeah. Okay. I think that almost every woman can relate
yeah.
to encountering somebody in their life,
yeah,
whether it's an intimate partner or somebody yeah. that they work with, who's angry, you know, and just ends up, I mean, if you end up in their way or in their circle, then some of that is going to end up hitting you.
Oh, yeah.
The whole idea of All Your Black Colors is this kind of, you know, when you meet people, there's... We're usually very generous with each other. And
yeah.
so, I mean, I don't know anything about auras or things like that, but we come away feeling light because there is this generosity passing between us that has, like, let's say the colors of the rainbow or
yeah.
whatever. You know, there's laughter, which is maybe, you know, orange, and there's,
yeah. okay,
you know, affection that's red or all of
yeah.
this. But I think what happens with people who are consumed by their own anger is that all of the colors that they're capable of are distilled and boiled down to black.
Okay.
Like there is no color coming through.
Yeah.
So,
that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So that's basically the idea.
Listless with lust while you serve the pages. X, X, X for what engages. All your black colors, all your black colors. You're just like the others with all your black colors. You lunch with a man, then you bed his wife. Sleight of your hand, you're a two-edged knife. Cursing commands, but you're petrified. Your breathing comes in gas and shudders. All your black colors, all your black colors. You're just like the others with all your black colors.
The second song you want to feature is called Goodbye Tennessee, and I think you wrote that about a bar or a restaurant that you used to play in Toronto, is that right?
Mitzi's sister was a bar, basically, that used to be called the Tennessee Tavern. And there was still a sign, I think, on the patio, like one of the old signs. Okay. And I believe it's gone back to that name now. The new owners, I think, have returned it to that name.
Okay.
A lot of people think it's written about actually Tennessee. Yep. They'll say, oh, did you spend time in Tennessee, right?
Yep.
But it's written about, you know, a lot of times in life what happens is we time out in a certain place. You know, we wake up and we realize, oh, I really should move on from this experience, whether it's a job or a social circle or whatever. And in my case, this was written about, really, it's time to go somewhere else.
Start fresh someplace. Yeah. For sure. Okay. For as far as instruments go, did you have a full band setting for that tune? Or
it's a little more stripped down. Okay. Because it's almost like a lullaby, Roger plays a cymbal, just like a shimmer cymbal in places.
Yep.
So it almost has a percussion vibe, what the drums are doing. And actually, it's one of those songs that sounds where it's not that different from the record to the, if I'm playing all by myself, right? Because it has that kind of mellow lullaby sense. And it's the last track on the album, which is kind of,
good.
It'll just put you to sleep.
All right.
Goodbye, Tennessee. God knows it's been bittersweet. Goodbye, Tennessee. Before you make a fool out of me. So long to the place I stood to play, and to the do not enter sign that showed the way. Farewell to the boy I leave behind, always a prince and a hero in my mind. Goodbye, Tennessee. Thought I'd find the love to set me free. Goodbye, Tennessee. What do we want? What can never be? Last call from Brian behind the bar. So long the stairs I have to climb, and past the overturned chairs, it's closing time. Hero in my mind. Goodbye.
It's Tamara Madeline here, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in.
Why don't we move into your current project, Blue Tulip, and you actually have two other projects, your Grade 8 and your Lara Loves Leonard. But let's talk about Blue Tulip. You started a little band in Stratford here?
I did. Yeah. I started a trio in 2016 because I was doing a lot of teaching and I wasn't getting out to perform as much. And I thought, okay, I want to perform with other people and I want to be in a milieu where I am, you know, kind of raising the stakes in a gathering at a party or something. I've never been one of those performers that is upset when people are talking when I'm playing. So the idea of supporting a party is not a step down for me, right? I like it. I don't need to be the center of the party. I don't mind being on the edge, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
So I approached these guys and we put together the trio. We're called Blue Tulip. I came up with that name. Lawrence Gauchy plays the bass and he's a great contributor to the art scene here, the music scene in particular here in Stratford. He's the conductor of the Festival City Big Band and the concert band, both of which haven't been performing, obviously, due to COVID.
Yeah, I did see them at the Stratford Country Club. I was too shy to do the swing dancing, but I love the band.
Oh, that's so great. Awesome. Yeah, they do great. Pre-COVID, they did those, and I'm sure once this is over, they'll be back at it.
Yep.
They're a great band. And Earl Filsinger, who is a great guitarist, great local guitarist, and also has a music store here in town, Filsinger Music, plays for a lot of theater. You know, the three of us have really gotten into a groove. These guys are a pleasure to work with. So anyway, we've been working together over time. We really haven't done as many performances as I might have conceived of to begin with.
Yep.
But I just haven't had the time to chase them down because of my other projects. So currently they are kind of number one on my list. And we are going into the studio this month. We're going to record our first single, an original piece that my brother and I wrote a few years ago. And it's called You Can't Lose. And we're going to release that on the 10th of November.
Great. Okay, good for you.
Yeah, we're going to follow it up with a video that we're going to film at La Osa, which is a great vintage and jewelry shop here in Stratford. And it's a beautiful interior. It was originally the Sears, I believe, here all those years ago.
Yep.
So we're really looking forward to that. And then hopefully we will finish up an EP following, follow up with that, finish up an EP. And then by that time, I'm hoping COVID will be a little less and there will be some festivals and things, right?
Okay. One of the things you do with your Blue Tulip is you take maybe contemporary songs or pop songs and you sort of give it a little bit of a twist, a jazzy twist or and I know I've seen you play like Paul Simon, for example. You did 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, but more on a jazzy version. I think you slowed it down a bit.
Yes.
You had a few stops in it that were in the original recording.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I was really inspired by Postmodern Jukebox, which is an outfit out of the States. And they take current hits and turn them into retro classics.
Yeah.
I think really very soon after creating the trio, I was introduced to Postmodern Jukebox and started to think about thinking outside of the box. So we do All About That Bass.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Which is, there is that vibe in there anyway, and we just take it a little bit further.
Okay.
Right. Then there are pieces we do like Leonard Cohen's Everybody Knows and, Gordon Lightfoot's Baby It's All Right and the Beatles' Oh Darlin', where there's more of a tip of the hat to how it was originally done, but it still has that swing.
Oh, okay. Good for you. I know you do Old Country by Nancy Wilson and Cannonball Adderley.
I love that tune. Again, the storytelling is paramount in that song. You can see the man sitting there that she's singing about. You feel all kinds of things in that story. Nancy Wilson is probably my favorite jazz singer.
Hey, you old man sitting
by the lonesome road. Ain't by time you're quitting, life's old ties some low. You're so sad and lonely, got no family, just an old man from some old country. You ain't sad nor chillin', ain't none by your side. You left all your women, ain't you satisfied? Don't just sit there clinging to a memory of a love left in some old country.
Lara Loves Leonard.
Yes, well, okay. Lara Loves Leonard has been kind of a long project. Okay. So I think back in 2014, I entered the idea for a curated performance of Leonard Cohen's songs and poems that would be about an hour. So obviously it would be, you know, a fraction of his canon. In this case, I created this this show called Lara Loves Leonard. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to have somebody who played cello and guitar and somebody who played drums and percussion instruments as the band. So there would be a trio situation again. And I wanted to strip down his songs so that the words really cut through. It's not that you don't experience the words in some of the arrangements that he has, but because he recorded many of them in the late 70s and 80s and 90s, you have a lot of instrumentation that is fashionable in the times, like saxophones and whatever.
They're made for radio, probably, more than
exactly
they are for the poetry to cut through, I guess.
Yeah. Lots of backup singers and all kinds of things. So what I wanted to do was focus on the words, and I created this show. And it was well received here in Stratford. And then I took it to a couple of fringe festivals. I decided I would take it. So I went to London and Ottawa. And it kind of grew in that time. And in order to take it to those festivals, I approached the guys. Again, Roger Tavassos was the drummer. And he actually did the engineering on this project. And then I hired Kevin Fox, who is extraordinary, to play the guitar, basically go back and forth between the cello and the guitar. So I used basically a background track, or like a karaoke track, for lack of a better term, really well done.
Okay.
And then I performed by myself on stage. Okay. It was so well received. The only real negative that I got from any of the critiques was, too bad that the guys aren't on stage with right?
Yeah.
Which I felt too. So I started thinking about the fact that I had this recording and how much I love those arrangements, and decided I really should organize a recording and support it. I've got the vocals recorded, and it's just the mixing and mastering that is happening now.
Good. So hopefully you can hit the road with that maybe next year then.
I think early in the new year, I'm hoping. I think that it's a time in our lives where we really need poetry.
Chaos in the world right now. Definitely,
It's really crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows. knows that the captain lied. Everybody's got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody's talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long-stemmed rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
This year you planned on going out west, and because of COVID it was canceled, but would that have been with the Leonard Cohen project?
No, that was with Grade 8, which is a theater show that grew out of, so Leonard, Laura Loves Leonard was the first show that I kind of ventured in, first solo show that I ventured into the independent kind of fringe festival theater scene with.
Okay.
And then I started trying others. So the next one was Laura Loves Lennon, which was John Lennon, who I'm, you know, just completely enamored with and have been since I was a young person. And that one I also used, I have a couple of books of his writings. So I pulled out some of his writing and the music, and actually worked with Earl and Lawrence on that show.
Okay.
And a drummer here in town, Chris Adair. And it was great. Okay. With Laura Loves Leonard, I really didn't put any of myself in it. I didn't engage in patter with the audience. It was really almost reverent.
Yeah.
But with Laura Loves Lennon, I was a little more expansive. I had a bunch of funny stories from my youth. Like my parents and I took a trip across the United States and back through Canada.
Okay.
We only had three tapes.
Okay.
And one of them was the White Album, right? So we just listened to that. And the other one was, one of the other ones was Zorba the Greek, right? So anyway, I told some vignettes, anecdotes from my life. And my friend Stacy came up to me. She's a great actress and educator in theater and film and TV. And she said, you know, you need more of that. You need more of those stories. That's when the connection is made, right?
Absolutely, for sure.
So then I started thinking about that for my next one, which I'd already planned was going to be Laura Loves Lightfoot. And I thought, okay, how about I try to tell a story in my life, like a year in the life, and use Lightfoot songs. So I moved out to Banff when I was 19. So Alberta Bound, right? Like that, that was a perfect start to that show, was telling that story. There were good things about that show. It's like, you know, you have growing pains when you're being creative. And that show was really like being in a cocoon, right? Experiencing things that I hadn't experienced before in the other things that I'd done. Certainly people came to the show that loved Lightfoot. And people came to this show who loved storytelling. I'm not sure that I'm fairly certain that I didn't make it as seamless as it could be. And what I realized when I kind of unpacked it for myself afterwards was, you know, I wasn't listening to Lightfoot songs when I was out there. I mean, obviously I listened to a few, but what I was listening to out there was Tears for Fears and Bananarama and, you know, whatever else was playing at the Silver City, which was the downtown bar, right? So I went back to the drawing board and I decided, hey, let's do something where the songs match the stories. And that's where I came up with Grade 8. I decided, okay, I'm going to go all the way back. At first I was reluctant. Who wants to see somebody reliving their 13th year? And how do I do that, right? How do I do that so it's entertaining and fun? I really had nothing to worry about because what it is it's a universal thing. You know, we come to a certain realization about our lives and about what the world is like at that coming of age time. Our perspectives start to shift and we start to negotiate the roles that people are expecting us to play. And the significant people in our lives are the ones that we are leaning on and taking our cues from. And I was really fortunate. What I realized was the anchor to the story was about my relationship with a boy named Sean from Windsor that I was in school with. And He was a tough kid. You know, he had to be. He was, you know, came from a home where his father wasn't around, where he had great support from his grandparents. But, you know, it was a burden for him to not have a dad when everybody else kind of had a dad.
Yeah.
And he was also a boy of color. And he faced what many people face, which is prejudice, racism.
Yeah.
In the schoolyard from some of the teachers. You know, it was in the culture. And we really forged this incredible relationship when I look back on it. That's not even what I wanted to talk about when I started writing the story, but it's amazing.
Yep.
You know, people who see the show, they say to me, they say, how do you remember all this stuff? But the interesting thing is you start journaling or, you know, you start writing a story about a time in your life and yep. everything starts coming back.
Sure, yeah.
You find the pictures and all that kind of stuff. So I was going to mount that here at the SpringWorks Festival in Stratford for the first time. I don't even really feel like it was ready. Like it's really ready now, right? After the different performances. But I realized, oh my goodness, I'm telling Sean's story as much as I'm telling mine, right? And I better get his approval. I felt like that was...
Oh, so you reached out to him then?
So I reached out to him, And he actually came to the show. He came from Windsor with his family.
Yeah.
They loved it. And then when I took it on tour here in Ontario a couple years ago to the festivals, I went to London, Hamilton, and Toronto. He came to the final Toronto performance.
Okay.
It was a sold-out house.
Yeah.
When I thanked everybody at the end for coming, I called him up and introduced him. And the crowd went wild.
That's
right?
Amazing. Okay.
It was so much fun.
Good.
So, and I think that... The interesting part about doing a storied concert with music is that, first of all, everybody of my generation is like, oh my God, I remember that. I remember that. And there's a lot of cultural things that I tip my hat to as well that aren't happening anymore, right? Yeah. They were there at the end of the 70s and early 80s. So it's amazing how many messages I get from people who afterwards say, oh, you know, I've been thinking about your show. It's been triggering all these memories for me for the last week. And, you know, it was so much fun. So I think that's really what I'm in it for, right?
Yeah.
Like we get up on stage and we want to say things to strangers that we can't say just walking up to them. We want to be able to share and be seen so that they can see themselves. I mean, that's what I want when I go to a performance.
Yeah.
I want that person to open some of myself to me. Unfortunately, as you said, this tour was supposed to take place, right? I was supposed to start in Windsor in May and go all the way across the Western provinces. So I was going to have performances in Regina, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Vancouver. And I was going to set up kind of some house concerts in between those dates to support some of my original music and just to meet people to make sure, you know, when you're in that theater fringe festival grind, you're working really hard because you have to get out and get people to your show.
Yeah.
So it's nice to end up connecting with people in a little more relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm really grateful that Vancouver, Winnipeg and Edmonton has basically deferred the participation to the following year. So I'm planning to do the tour this coming year.
So how are you keeping in touch with all your fans?
You can find me on Facebook.
Okay.
I have a number of different pages. So Blue Tulip has a page and Laura McMillan has a page. And some of the shows have a page, like Grade 8 has a page.
Okay.
And then I have a blog that I started, which I call LaraOutloud.com. And then they can find me at LaraMcMillan.com.
Definitely easy to get.
Yeah, I think that's even great. If you just Google my name, you'll find places to figure things out.
Well, it was a real pleasure to meet with you.
I just loved this experience, Steve.
Okay.
I'm so glad you're doing this, and I thank you for having me.
All right, thanks a lot.